Live from the 607, it's the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour, where we're talking everything movies, TV, comics, and entertainment. Join in the conversation on social media with the hashtag ODPH, because here we go. Welcome to an all-new edition of the ODPH Podcast. What is happening, everybody? Thank you so much for joining us this week. My name is Ken M. Joining me in studio, as always, you know him. He's the co-host. Wait for it. His name is Padawan J.
Well, let me talk to you.
Yeah, and boy, do we have a lot to talk about in the land of movies, TV, comics, and more. You are tuned in to the entertainment edition of the ODPH, and we definitely like to keep those conversations going after the show. So, Pad, where does everybody go?
ODPHpodcast.com.
Right on. You go over to the website, sign up on all the social media accounts. Everything's updated on the front page. So if you want to talk in between shows, there is no better place to go than Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky, Threads, which Threads is blowing up lately.
Yeah.
Threads I is gaining some ground on Twitter. So if anybody hasn't dipped in there a while.
I'm remembering I have an account on there.
Yeah. No, we're getting good traction there. Love having the conversations with everybody on social. So definitely like to talk in between shows. Talk to me, talk to Pad. We enjoy having those conversations because that's how we build in for the shows the following week. That's how we do. That's what we do here at the ODPH Society. So make sure to sign up, follow, subscribe, do what you need to do there. Also, check out the TeePublic store link. A lot of great swag is there if you want to go support the brand out in the wild. So go ahead and make sure to sign up, you know, go get some when it's on sale. We always encourage the sale. Also, check out the Patreon link, one tier, $2 a month, and bonus content is dropped there. Like, for say, we did the preview for UFC 298. Our guy Mike from the Multiverse of Badness, he was chiming in about that. He had a lot to say about that fight, and I definitely have to catch up with him about that too. A lot of headlines going on there, so if you caught the sports edition, you want that little bonus content, boom, it's right there. And it also helps support the brand as well. The blog section is there. We're always dropping reviews left and right. The directory, which, Pat, how many providers are we on?
269,818.
I don't question him. That is why he is a statistician to the stars. Also, the classified section where you can find friends of the show, such as 3FM Podcast. Great episodes this week, too, by the way. If you haven't checked those guys out, make sure to hit that subscribe button. We even have their embedded player on the site, too, because that's how good they are. Dragon Master Games, Nerd Initiative. Holy smokes. Go on Instagram and go see all the guests that we've had come through for Turn the Page alone. And we have more coming, too. It's crazy. It's insane.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, the music section. I mean, there's so much going on at the ODPH. Like I say, if you want to find out anything and everything, simple. Go over to odphpodcast.com. And if you're on social media, use the hashtag ODPHpod.
Real quick, if you are one of our listeners down in the state of Texas and dealing with the fires right now, please stay safe.
Yes, please stay safe.
Saw that on the news this morning and went, oh, my God, that's scary as all hell. And then they went on and say that the one fire, because I believe there's multiple going on.
Yes.
But the one fire, as of this morning when I was watching Good Morning America, they said was, quote, 0% contained. And I went, oh, my God. So, yeah. If, like I said, you're one of our listeners in Texas, please stay safe.
Indeed. Wherever you are in the world, if you're seeing the bad weather is coming, and especially to like natural disasters like that,
yeah.
Please stay safe. Whatever you do, just, you know, take care of yourselves, take care of your families, and just, you know, stay out of harm's way as much as possible. That being said, we got to get into the show, and kicking off this week, as we alluded to on last week's episode,
yeah,
a certain, do we call them iconic characters?
I would say so at this point. I mean, once you crossed multiple genres, I feel like, or mediums, I guess I should say, you know, they went from the page, then they went to the television screen, and then they switched over to video games. And I'm not even talking like their own IP video games. You know, there's Walking Dead Destinies, which, boy, if you're playing that one, you are a stronger individual than I am.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't got the, you know what, to play that. But no, two of the three characters in the show we're about to talk about are in Fortnite. So I feel like once you cross into the juggernaut that is Fortnite, yeah, you're pretty iconic.
Well, you'd have to think about with the hype that has been going around this show that has spun out of the pages of Robert Kirkman, Tony Moore, and Charles Adlard's infamous comic book that has just became a pop culture phenomenon.
Yeah.
And when it was in its heyday, the number one show on TV without any question.
Yep.
And obviously going the lengths that it did, there was some shakeups over the years and,
oh, yeah.
You know, with any TV show. And now we have come back almost full circle because we now have the return of Rick Grimes and Michonne to AMC TV in the brand new series titled The Walking Dead The Ones Who Live.
Yes.
So this has been the long rumored movie slash series that we have heard ever since Andrew Lincoln announced his departure from The Walking Dead in season 9.
Yeah.
Danai Gurira followed suit right after.
The next season.
Mm-hmm. So two of the biggest stars on the show left.
Which was understandable. I mean, listen, at that point it was nine seasons, 10 years for Andrew Lincoln to be on one show. He said at the time he wanted to spend more time with his family, which, hey, I get it. You know, for any TV show to be doing one thing consistently for 10 years is a long friggin' time.
Yes. So I understand why both were doing it.
Yeah.
And like I say, I don't
fault. New opportunities.
Yeah, I don't fault them because a shelf life for a TV show, if you make it 10 years, that is really pushing it.
Danai Gurira, you also remember, was getting fairly busy in the MCU.
Oh, yeah. It was taken off.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I perfectly understand why they left. And like I say, I'm not faulting. But to see them come back is definitely going to bookend their character's journey in the Walking Dead universe. Obviously, the flagship show is long since ended.
For now.
Yeah. The spinoffs. Well, the spinoffs are going strong.
Yeah.
But this has been the one that fans have been most anticipating for.
Yeah.
Because obviously the two main characters involved.
Yeah.
And how is their story going to play out?
Because and what the hell have they been doing this whole time?
Yeah. Because we last saw Rick was picked up by a mysterious helicopter.
At the end of the episode, he left.
Mm-hmm. And Michonne had left to go after him.
Didn't Michonne show up for like a episode though? I feel like she did. She left, disappeared for a while, and then showed up for like a episode, I think, in the final season.
It might have been a quick cameo to set up her role in this, because last we knew, this was all supposed to be Rick Grimes-centric.
Yes.
But obviously tying in their relationship into the show, I think, is a great idea. So I like how they switched it up for this.
Oh, yeah. I do, too.
And like I say, the fan base has been waiting on this for so long. In fact, this was up there with The Flash.
Yeah.
And the Don Quixote movie that I would have to physically be there watching it.
Yeah.
Because I did not believe this was ever going to hit screen.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I was proved wrong. And it finally has debuted February 25th on AMC television.
Yeah.
So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be breaking down the first episode of this entitled Years. Now, if you're new to the ODPH, first and foremost, thank you for checking us out. Leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher. It definitely helps the algorithm of the show. We like to give a spoiler-free statement about what we're going to review. So if you haven't seen this yet and you want to kind of get the temp in the room from us, we give it to you without ruining anything for you. However, we do give you a countdown. After said countdown, pause the episode, duck out if you haven't seen it and you don't want anything ruined. Because we go into full spoilers, we do not hold anything back. So you have been fair warned. So you have to make that choice for you. And Pat is very kind enough to put the liner notes timestamp in there for you as well. So if you're not sure where to jump out, he puts it right there. Boom. Watch the episode, come back in the conversation, and you're all caught up. So that being said, Pat, give me your spoiler-free statement on the first episode of The Ones Who Live.
I thought it was a really solid episode. I mean, all things considered, you know, having been a while since we saw Andrew Lincoln and Danai Gurira back in those roles, I was kind of skeptical, you know, would they be able to fill the shoes again? Would they be able? Would it be a seamless re-entering the house, so to speak, or would it be kind of like, this feels like the same place, but it's a little different? They fit right back into those shoes. It was a great first episode. It was interesting to see things play out and kind of get an idea of where things were and how we'd gotten to this point, you know. And I'm very interested to see where things go from here, because there's one moment in this episode that was very anticipated by some folks, and I know I marked out when it happened. You know, so I'm interested to see maybe we get some more of those. I don't know. We'll see.
This episode was a lot darker.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Than recent memory. And you know what?
It was the darkness they strayed away from after Glenn got killed.
I agree. You're reading my mind.
Yeah.
I was like, let's go.
They were pushing the envelope and they were not afraid.
Because the one thing is, if you've never read the comic by Robert Kirkman, it goes some places.
Yes, it does.
It is not a happy read by any stretch of the imagination.
All I'm going to say is Lori and Judith.
Yeah.
Enough said. If you know, you know.
Uh-huh.
And if you don't, reader discretion is advised.
Yeah. It's a fantastic story. But it is not meant for the young, and it is not meant for people with weak stomachs.
No.
This was a throwback to that first season.
Yeah.
I think they did push a couple things to the extreme a little bit.
Oh, yeah, they did.
And it was kind of a little shock to me to see. But I was happy to see it, but it took me a little while to process it. Because I'm so used to them playing it so safe.
Uh-huh.
Because ever since the Glenn episode of The Walking Dead,
uh-huh,
in my opinion, I think Pat agrees with this too,
yeah,
there has been a major shift in the risk taking on this show franchise.
It was the polar opposite to what happened with Game of Thrones.
Yes.
The Glenn death episode of The Walking Dead is The Walking Dead's Red Wedding.
Mm-hmm.
It is the most shocking moment in the show. If you were a reader of the source material, you knew it was coming.
Yeah.
You and I had conversations before we started this podcast.
Yes.
Both wondering, because the rumors and the announcements were out that they're going to do Negan, and we're like, how the fuck are they going to do Glenn?
Mm-hmm.
We were like, I don't think they can do it. We were discussing ways they could possibly do it but not show it. And then they went on screen and did a panel for panel, or shot for shot, I guess I should say, of what happens in the comic.
Yeah.
Watch the scene, read the comic immediately after, you'll see what I mean. And where people with Game of Thrones went, oh my God, and then kept watching, although admittedly we know everything about the way that show ended.
Yeah.
You know, fans leaned into it like, oh my God, this is crazy. I got to see more. Whereas with this, they were like, this ain't what I signed up for. And the powers that be, whether it was the showrunners or the writers or the network itself, we don't know. I doubt we'll ever know. You know, kind of went, oh, you know what? Maybe we got to pull it back a little bit. Mm-hmm. And they never turned it back on.
Yeah, they never regained the steam.
Yeah.
And this is a situation where when I saw this episode, I'm like, we're
back.
We're back.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see where we go from here.
Yeah.
And it did have some strong performances.
Yes.
So there's a lot to sink your teeth into with this. Like, if you've been waiting to see that throwback style of The Walking Dead storytelling.
If you're on the fence, definitely give it a watch.
Yeah.
If you're a fan of early season Walking Dead, you'll love this.
Mm-hmm. There are a couple loopholes, though. It wasn't a perfect episode.
Oh, sure.
But we'll get into that as we go on, because there's a couple points I'm like, I got questions. But that's what we do the spoiler talk for. So that being said, in 3, 2, 1, Pad, talk to me.
This was a return to form for Walking Dead that I have not seen since at least before Rick left, and probably even sooner, because I still felt The Walking Dead was good, or at least watchable, up until Rick left. And then it was kind of like hit or miss up and down afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
This was, like you said, a return to form and a return to early season where you did not know what the fuck was going to happen. You did not know who was going to make it or if anyone was going to die. You know, and it was something that the show had in the franchise for me, you know, because I haven't watched everything, but it's been something that's been missing for a number of seasons, and I loved it. You know, it's one of those shows where I don't often want to rewatch an episode after it's aired. Usually it's like, oh, I'm a one and done, I'm good.
Mm-hmm.
This is one that, like, I want to rewatch it. I want to go back and rewatch it and see if I missed anything, if I maybe pick up on some stuff differently or something I might have missed the first time through. You know, this, and maybe it's the writing, because according to IMDb, Scott M. Gimple, who is the was a showrunner on the mainline show for so many years and is kind of like the Dave Filoni of the Walking Dead universe now.
Yeah.
You know, he's got a writing credit, but then also Danai Gurira and Andrew Lincoln themselves have writing credits on this. Maybe it's got something to do with the writing. I don't, maybe it's, you know, the powers that be kept their hands off and just said, hey, listen, do whatever you want to do. But this was awesome.
Well, they needed to really set a high tempo early.
And plus the bar, what you knew was high on this.
Oh, yeah, because we said, too, on the show last week, it needed to get a million views to really make sure it was hitting its mark.
Sure.
Viewership was 890,000.
Uh-huh.
Which,
not bad.
I'm still going to say is a win.
Yeah.
Even though it wasn't the full million, it at least generated enough that fans tuned in.
Yeah.
And showed there is a little bit of a spark left for the story, which I think is a good sign. Like I say, it wasn't a perfect home run, but
sure.
I think the fact that they were that close, because I was initially fearing it was going to be lower.
Right.
And that's where I was kind of going with that for last week.
Right.
But I think it still is a decent enough win that fans tuned in, and they are going to really kind of give you a benchmark about for next week. Because next week, I think, is where you really need to watch.
Yeah, typically with shows, either even when they return,
yeah,
you know, for second, third, fourth, whatever season, the premiere's always high, and then it comes down, and then you kind of see where things are. Just for some context, for Sunday Original Cable, and I'm getting this from SpoilerTV.com, according to them, Walking Dead, The Ones Who Lived, looked to be the number five show on cable. So not, you know, the big CBS, Fox, NBC, ABC, Big Four.
Not the Big Four anymore.
Not the Big Four.
CW, I don't think anybody counts as a fifth one now. I think it's more considered.
They're the little brother
right.
at the end of the table looking to get recognized.
Mm.
But for
in
not,
our opinion.
For cable, they were the number five show on television Sunday night. So number one and number two were NBA regular season games, one between the Denver Nuggets and Golden State Warriors. Number two was between the Sacramento Kings and the LA Clippers. Number three was NBA Courtside. So that is the broadcast over there on ESPN. Then you've got 90 Day Fiancé, which that's a whole juggernaut in and of itself. And then you've got Walking Dead, Ones Who Live.
So
you got three sports things,
mm-hmm.
one reality show. So, and then after Walking Dead, you get Tournament of Champions contest on Food Network. Okay, game show / reality TV. Then you got Real Housewives of Potomac, so reality TV. Eight was Where is Wendy Williams, the documentary thing, so documentary.
Mm-hmm.
Nine, Naked and Afraid on Discovery, so reality. Number 10 was Women's College Basketball, so sports. You don't get into like another thing of actual television until you got to go down a ways.
Right. Well, I mean, the climate has changed since when they were first on, but still.
So if you just go from straight like scripted television, they're the number one scripted show on TV Sunday night.
Right. I mean, there's a way you can spin it.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think at the end of it, it just really kind of showed there was some interest to it.
Yeah.
And I think the fans were greeted for their interest because,
because
like I say, where we jump in, this show is set now 5 years after Rick was picked up.
Yep.
From the helicopter. He's in the CRM's clutches.
Yep.
And it's kind of an interesting opening shot because he's staring out a window and it almost looks like, you know, one of those like old movies.
Yeah.
Where it's, I don't want to say there's like brainwashing going on, but
something funny's going on.
Something weird is going on because you just see the back of his head and he's staring out the window and it's just kind of processing everything going on. And then they start walking the viewers through his attempts to escape, like
right.
when he was first there, to the point where they go back to a scene from the comics.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
You want to break this one down, Pat?
No, I'll let you do this one.
So they show this instance where he is connected via his arm to one of the CRM soldiers. And what they're doing is they're basically testing out their captives about if they can fight the zombies that are approaching.
Well, I think they're also using them as pawns, to use the term from chess.
Mm.
You know, they, let's face it, they're not the soldiers. They're not of any rank in the military. They're just cannon fodder. They're bodies to throw at the front line. The front line in this case being going up against the Walking Dead, the zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And let's face it, if these guys die, if these guys and women die, not the worst thing in the world. Like, it's no big loss. It's one less mouth we got to feed back at camp.
Yeah.
You know, so they're not sacrificing any of their own guys. But at the same token, you know, they're taking them on the outside of the wall or outside of the living space, and they don't trust them any further than they can throw them, metaphorically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why they've got them hooked up.
Yes. And this is an interesting scenario because during this, Rick decides to try doing a daring escape.
For like the fourth time.
Mm-hmm. But this is one that he goes back to the comic books.
Did not see this coming.
Did not see this coming as well.
Marked out like a madman, though.
Rick cuts off his hand.
Uh-huh. I was like, he puts his arm on, what was it, like a stump of a tree?
Yeah, it was a tree stump.
He puts his arm on a tree stump, and I'm like, what the fuck? And then it clicked, and I'm like, oh my God, we're going to do it.
Yeah.
The thing fans have wanted for the longest time in the show.
And so did he. Andrew Lincoln came out and said he wanted to do it for the longest time.
And we finally got it. And I'm like, oh my God, yes.
Yes. So he cuts off his hand.
And then cauterizes it in a fucking fire.
Yes. This is like the first 15 minutes of the show.
Literally.
Like, let's go.
Holy shit.
Like, they got down to business.
Because he's bleeding profusely because, hey, you just cut your own fucking hand off.
Yeah. And they did not hold back on the graphicness.
No, they didn't.
So, like we touched upon, this was such a throwback to that first season / comic run.
Uh-huh.
That longtime readers like Pat and myself are very happy about this.
No, I was.
Some online, not so much. But listen, this is the way of the world of The Walking Dead. It's not all sunshine and roses.
Yep.
And with Rick now handless,
Yeah.
He tries making the escape. They do catch him.
He doesn't get far.
He didn't get too far, but it's more or less they were just breaking him down because the CRM had bigger plans for him.
Uh-huh.
So he's still writing to Michonne and trying to leave his diary here.
Yep.
But he does get assigned to a new location.
Mm-hmm.
And, Pat, where is he assigned to?
The outskirts of Philadelphia.
Yes, because now the Civic Republic military.
The CRM.
Yes. Has now taken control of the city.
Or most of it. They never really say.
It's a little confusing.
It's ambiguous.
Yeah, it's just kind of left open because basically you have to go through them to get into the city, whatever's left of it.
And I've been to Philly. Big city.
Yes. So
impressive that they took over even a moderate amount of it.
Well, it's alluded to later in the show that they've taken over other cities as well. So this is not just a one-off that we've had previously in The Walking Dead. That you come across one city and it's only one person or one group running it. Like this
it's a little more believable.
Yeah, this makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
And then during this time, he does meet up with a soldier by the name of Donald Okafor, who's played by Craig Tate, who's a lieutenant colonel in the CRM. And he is basically trying to recruit Rick because Rick has been showing through their tests that he can handle himself. He's more than just an average citizen, I guess you could say.
Yeah, there's a little more to him than just, you know, your average Joe.
Yes, and at this point, too, he does get a metal hand.
Yep.
Like knight armor.
Uh-huh.
So that'll come into play a little bit later.
Yep.
So you do see that Okafor does see something in him because all Rick is doing is taking care of zombie herds that are coming up to the fence and the walls of the city. And he's
very much akin to, what was it, season 3 when they were at the prison.
Yes. So it's very similar in that aspect. And during this time, too, Rick is having flashbacks of a perfect world with Michonne. And
was it flashbacks or was he dreaming?
You know, that was the thing. I think it was part dreaming, part flashbacks at times. It was more dreaming than anything, but he still was remembering his old life.
Yeah.
Because obviously this scenario, like I say, they seemed like they were in a utopia when they were first meeting and trying to have a lunch date. And
yeah, well, he's looking for someplace. He being Rick is looking for, he needs to get someplace and he's looking to get there, but he's a little lost. Mm-hmm. And Michonne is sitting in presumably a park or some riverside or someplace nice. And she's having her lunch and he's just like, hey, sorry to bother you, but like, I don't know where I'm going. Can you help me out? And she's almost like, you can tell, obviously, oh, she's kind of likes him. He seems nice. And they hit it off from there.
Yeah. So it is a nice little backdrop to what's going on. Like, I like how the writers balance this out.
It was a nice break of pace.
Yeah. Cause they needed it. There was just too much darkness going on with this. And it's something that Kirkman did very well in the comics, I think.
Yes.
But this is the first time in the show I think they really kind of emphasized on that a little bit. And I think with the two characters involved, because that's what people are waiting to see, their eventual reunion.
Sure.
To take it back to these throwback moments to, like I said, the dream sequence. And then they did tie in like some flashbacks right before Rick was taken out by the exploding bridge.
Right.
From said episode that he was his last one on the show. So like I say, when they kind of mix this in, it does provide a good balance. And you do see that he's having this frenemyship, if I can use that word, with Okafor.
Uh-huh.
Because Okafor is really trying to have him, you know, almost break his will. Like, there's a lot of that going on.
You can tell this isn't Okafor's first rodeo.
Mm-hmm.
That he's been in this position before, and clearly at every opportunity and every instance he's had beforehand, you know, it's been relatively easy before. But he ain't run into anyone like Rick.
No.
Rick is a little hard-headed.
No, Rick is definitely holding on to what made him, you know, the Rick-tator that we all know and love. So he is getting the training. He is coming across more people in, you know, his journey that is going on. So we're starting to see the little seeds get planted for, you know, future moments in this series.
Yeah.
But it does come down to he's having like more heart-to-hearts with Okafor because Okafor really wants to get him involved.
Yeah, he wants to get him involved in the military, and Rick is a little hesitant at that because he brings up, he goes, oh, I saw what happened in Atlanta, or I saw what happened when the military tried to get involved, which, how did you see that, my guy? You were in a coma.
Well, I think when they went to the CDC.
Oh, you know what? That's a good point.
Episode 9 of the first season.
Yes, that's a good point.
That was the only thing I could think of, because when he was in his coma, a lot of stuff was happening, but when he came out, I think...
Because he brings up napalm.
Well, they start talking about how napalmed was going on in the cities, and how you see that Okafor is breaking down about how he was part of the Pennsylvania National Guard at the time.
Yeah, and that was their plan, was to napalm the city.
Yeah, and they did it to multiple cities.
Yeah.
Which is something that I was a little puzzled at.
Okay.
Because with the amount of napalm that they were using to get rid of the zombies, I thought at one point they mentioned about Texas. And that is where Fear the Walking Dead is.
Texas was mentioned.
Yes. So I was going, just for me, since I watched Fear, how did that all tie together? Because in Fear, they had a nuclear warhead go off.
Right.
So how does that all play in together and such? But I know I'm overthinking this, but it's just, you know, stuff that comes across. Like, were they trying to give a nod to it a little bit?
Maybe.
So it is interesting if they want to try playing that route, which, I mean, would bring up a lot more stories. But during this time, too, you do get this very emotional back and forth between Okafor and Rick.
Right.
And Okafor is saying basically like what he's had to sacrifice. So he's like, "Don't, Rick, don't tell me about what you're trying to sacrifice. Uh-huh. I've had to sacrifice my own wife because she died during this attack, but we saved the city." And it was going basically like the ends justified the means, which
right.
One thing that we've always said on the show, and I think it remains true, The Walking Dead is a weird perspective to live in.
Yeah.
So if anybody's like, I can't believe that he was justifying it, this is a life or death situation that is truly apocalyptic.
Yeah, and at this point, they're multiple years into this.
Yes.
And none of them are the same.
No, and you really have to take that in perspective when you're hearing this, because obviously we don't live through that.
No.
But to hear them do it, and so calmly too, like, I mean, kudos to the acting of this.
Yeah.
But it really reflected the pain that was going on.
Yeah.
And this is one situation that is playing in there because Okafor is really trying to sell his idea to Rick about what they could do. And he does have a little bit of opposition, though, from the Major General.
Uh-huh.
And that is played by a very familiar actor.
Hell yeah, it is.
Pat, who plays him?
Terry O'Quinn, who you might not know the name, but if you saw the face, you might remember the face as Locke from Lost.
Yes. So Okafor's plan is he really wants to make some changes into the CRM, which, like anything that we've seen on The Walking Dead, when you try going against the established regime, it usually winds up bad.
Uh-huh.
Because why, Pad?
Reasons.
So as he's trying to do this with the Major General, it's not exactly happening. And then we start getting into a little bit more of Rick's training, and you are seeing him use his knife hand.
Assassin blade.
Yeah, literally, because
fucking, unless that's inspired from the Assassin's Creed.
Yes. So we are seeing a little more back and forth, and they do just dabble into Rick writing in his journal, and
I think at this point he's just trying to keep some semblance of sanity in his head
because
everyone he knows from his entire life is not there.
Yeah.
You know, his wife is dead, Carl's dead, Judith's off doing her own thing at this point. The entire crew he knew is missing. I would assume he thinks Michonne's looking for him, but he doesn't know where she is. He doesn't know. You know, for all he knows, she could have gone west instead of going north. Like, at this point, he feels like he's on an island by himself, and he's just trying to keep the pieces together.
Yeah, he's just trying to keep his old memories together. That's why they dive heavy into that dream sequence.
Yeah.
Which they dabble into back and forth. Like I say, it's nice how they pace that, I will say.
Yeah.
Because it definitely gives a little break before his next escape attempt. Which, I mean, it kind of becomes a recurring theme. Like, he's still...
He ain't happy and he's still there.
Yeah, he's still trying to get out, and obviously this attempt fails yet again.
Yeah, and then while he's back in the facility, whatever you want to call it, some point along the way, these folks figured out how to get televisions working again, which, hey, kudos to you. That's kind of impressive, all things considered.
Yeah.
They've got televisions working. There's news broadcasts going on, although given the state of most large gatherings we've seen in The Walking Dead, don't know if I trust those broadcasts at all. But we do see, because it gets brought up at earlier in the episode, that Omaha is also another city in Nebraska. That's another city that's set up much akin to Philadelphia. But we find out that Omaha has fallen and that it has been, quote unquote, overrun by a herd. Although, based on some looking up and some research we've done, I wouldn't believe that.
Yeah, definitely would not believe that. I wonder if it's just more CRM propaganda, if you will.
That's a safe bet.
But with all this kind of weighing on Rick, and he's now just mentally getting broken down.
Yeah.
He finally says, My old life is gone. Okay, I'm here. And he does like this weird parting goodbye of writing to Michonne.
Yeah.
Like it's the final farewell letter. And he just basically says, the old me is gone. Here's the new me.
Yep.
He's now a commander in the military ranks of the CRM.
Looking real nice in that outfit.
Mm-hmm. Oh, he's cleaned up and he's now just really one of the team there.
Yeah.
So on a mission, he is now flying in a helicopter.
Yeah, because they get sent out to find something because like they lost contact or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So during this, he's talking about a story from his past, and it all leads to him finally saying with Okafor, okay, I'm in. Now, this is after they've been going the whole frenemy route the entire show. So now it seems like they're on good pace, everything's good, and then all of a sudden, boom, Okafor is killed.
Yep.
Instantly.
Like puff of red smoke.
Yeah. With... Was it an arrow? I mean, he was just impaled.
I think I don't know what the hell. I thought it was an explosion.
Yeah,
because his body is gone.
Yeah, like he's in the front seat of there, and he's gone. And Rick is like, "What is going on?" And sure enough, they're now taking heavy fire in the air.
Yeah, and if memory serves, I think the tail rotor, because they're in a helicopter, a military helicopter. If memory serves, the tail rotor's gone,
mm-hmm.
and they're falling to the ground because, hey, in case you didn't know how helicopters work, you need both rotors to function.
Yeah. So they wind up making this dramatic crash.
Yeah, he starts leading the forces like, oh, do this, do X, Y. Like, looking like a straight soldier out of a war movie.
Mm-hmm. But while he's doing this, he sees two others are getting taken out behind him by a mysterious figure who's now stabbing them with a very big katana blade.
Yep.
And then winds up getting the upper hand on Rick, is ready to cut his throat.
Yep.
It reveals the mask, and it turns out it's Rick, because Rick has his face covered.
Well, and I think at this point, Rick knows who it is.
Yes.
So he goes, if I do this, I should save myself.
Yes. And sure enough, we find out the person behind the attack, allegedly, is Michonne.
Uh-huh.
So the big reunion happens, and that's how the episode ends.
Yes.
So there's a lot that goes on here. I mean, the good part of this, like we said, the tone of the episode, I think, was a real win.
Yeah.
I think they really hit the strides when they started doing the slow breakdown of Rick. And they kept going back to him in his bunker and just looking out the window and just doing the writing of the journal. And you could see the dialogue that Andrew Lincoln was saying. And it really, you could tell every time that scene was happening on repeat, it was more of a breakdown, more of the acceptance of my life is over. I thought the moments with Okafor was really good.
Yeah, I did too.
And it didn't really feel super forced.
Right.
It felt like Okafor really saw something in Rick and was really trying to win him over. But then again, he had his own mysterious motives going on as well.
Right.
The only thing that really threw me off was near the end, because when Rick just all of a sudden is like, okay, I'm in, and they're going on their missions, and that final scene was just like, wait, what? Like, how did Michonne get air weaponry?
Mm-hmm.
And well, we don't know.
We'll find out next episode, because in the preview for next week's episode, looks like it's going to be what happened to Michonne in the time when Rick was captured.
Yes. So we'll get that backstory as well, too, because they didn't really touch too much after that about the CRM, and I thought they kind of maybe extended themselves a little much with the escape attempts.
Sure.
Which I understand why, but it was kind of like, okay, here we go again. It just kind of felt... You know,
I mean, I get it was trying to hammer home the point that he's trying to escape, but like, I got that after he cut his hand off in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah, like I say, we didn't need two other attempts.
Yeah.
We didn't need that. We didn't need the, you know, complaining at the wall. I understand why they did, because they really wanted to establish about how his angst was fueling himself, and then let it go.
And I think the other part of it, too, was like they're trying to show this has been a guy that for like his entire life in this universe. Mm. Or in this apocalypse. Because you can look at it as he's really had two lives.
Yes.
He's had his life pre-apocalypse. Then he went into the coma, woke up, and then there was the apocalypse. And the entire time since he's woken up from the coma all those years ago in Georgia, he's been in control. You know, there's been times where, you know, he hasn't had the upper hand and the governor and Negan and what have you. But, like... At the end of the day, he's always been the one calling the shots and the one, you know, dictating what happens. And this is the first time we've seen him where that's really not the case. That, like, he's not the main dog, so to speak.
Yeah. No, this is a situation, that we're seeing him really trying to find his way now. And, yeah. and after he buys into this life that Okafor has been building for him,
yeah.
it's taken away from him because now he's going to have this weird reunion with Michonne, who's in yeah. full armor.
Yeah.
And we don't exactly know what she's been doing since she left the show.
Right.
So next week's episode is going to be very detailed for it, and then we have to wait to get to three. Now, this the series is going to be going six episodes, so they did yeah. split up the episode length.
Yep.
So I know last week we said it was going to go three, but now we're at
six. We were going off what IMDb said, but right. yeah, it's six.
But yeah, no, they're splitting up, and that's right, too, because this was an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I know we kind of cut out some things, too, but at the end of the day, the gist point is Rick Grimes came back strong.
Yep.
I liked how the acting was with Andrew Lincoln.
I did, too.
The story, like I said, they could have shaved off a couple points here yeah. and maintained the story. Like
It
wasn't bad. Like, it wasn't super egregious. Like,
there wasn't any point where I'm like, oh, my God, okay, we get it, move on. Like, there wasn't any of that for me.
Yeah, no, I think there was only maybe a couple moments, but it wasn't anything that took me out of this episode.
Sure.
Like, if I have to give it on the grade scale, I mean, I'll give it a solid 7.9.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
I agree with that. I mean, the only thing for me that kind of threw me was I missed initially where they said they were. So I'm like, wait, where the fuck are they? And like, I'm looking at the city skyline going, trying to figure out where it is. And I'm like, okay, that's clearly not Virginia. I'm like, that's clearly not New York. And then it got mentioning, I'm like, oh, right, they're in Philly.
Yeah.
You know, so there was some stuff like it was just me missing it that pulled me out for a couple seconds, but I got back in.
Well, it's just a matter of just trying to catch up to Rick too. Cause they moved at such a fast pace at the beginning.
Yeah.
That once they took the time to slow down.
Yeah.
That's where the episode really started hitting.
The other thing I noticed, too, and maybe you noticed it, I don't know. There were a couple moments I think Andrew Lincoln forgot to put on his Southern accent a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Which, hey, I'm willing to let it slide. It's been a few years since you've done the role and you've done the accent. Because if for those of you who don't know, peek behind the curtain, he's British.
Mm-hmm.
But I noticed that a couple times where like he was doing an American accent, but he wasn't doing a Southern American Southern accent.
Yeah, the one fight with Okafor, he let it slip badly.
I noticed that. I was like, ooh, okay.
Yeah, I was like, okay, I'm not
holding it against him. No, I get it.
Because he fully went method acting about that because he was just so caught up in the moment. That's why I was like, okay, yeah. I'm going to let it slide.
Yeah.
But overall, like I say, I mean, I think it hit its mark, and now yeah. I'm just waiting to see how fans respond to episode two. Pat, final thoughts on the episode?
Thought it was a great episode. Solid start to the season. Excited to see where this goes. Obviously, it might take till episode three before we really get things moving, you know, because obviously it's been a few years since we've seen Rick. It's been a few years since we've seen Michonne. Got a lot to catch up on, but once we really get going, I am excited to see. Should be more of the same for next week because I looked. The directors of the first episode are also directing episode two, so it should be kind of like a similar vibe and feel from episode one, which if that's the case, I'm all right with.
Definitely let us know what you think. The Walking Dead, The Ones Who Live airs Sunday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on AMC, unless you have AMC Plus, and that's a different story. But in the meantime, though, hit us up on the hashtag ODPHpod. What is your thoughts about The Walking Dead Return of Rick and Michonne? How are you feeling about the series? Did you love it? Did you hate it? And why? Let's talk about it. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, all. I'm Frank. Join me and my friends as we talk about all things geek. Here at Geek Freaks Podcast, we go over the weekly news of everything in geekdom, from movies to TV, video games, and comic books. We also have a growing YouTube community. Join us as we go over everything in your geek life and share in the love of geekdom.
Coming back for another segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast, and there was a little conference that happened this past week.
Yeah.
Comics Pro Comic Industry Conference in Pittsburgh, and there was a lot of news involving DC Comics that came out of this, and this had some storylines we got to go break down a little bit. The first one that really jumped out to me is they have announced that in the summertime they're going to be moving their book release date back to Wednesdays.
That's wild.
I'm so excited about this. It's not even funny. I cannot wait for this. And I think because when it's all on new comic book day, like one day,
right?
I really think that that's just a time for a fan to go. I understand why, you know, in my opinion, they do it on Tuesdays to get your jump start. And listen, that's great and all. But I think no matter what, your fans are going to show up whenever it shows up. And one trip to the comic shop, you know, is definitely worth a while.
Yes.
So like I say, I'm very, very excited to see what they're going to do for that. I hope they do something big, like almost like a free comic book day type deal.
Yeah.
When they go back to Wednesdays. But like I said, that's not slated until July. The other news that was really kind of catching our attention here at the ODPH is we have an announcement of a major crossover coming out. And reading the DC.com blog post, quote, through the dawn of DC, Amanda Waller's combined combination of pure ruthlessness and dangerous alliances has placed her in the precipice of fulfilling her pledge, the elimination of all metahumans' abilities planet-wide. This summer, her plan takes a major step forward with absolute power, DC's big summer blockbuster.
Yeah.
Helmed by the critically acclaimed duo of Mark Waid and Dan Mora.
God damn.
Four-issue limited series launches July 2nd and shows how Waller will use the strategic and military might of Failsafe. That is the robotic Batman.
Oh, shit.
That has the his alternate personality uploaded in him.
So it's what if the Terminator meets Batman?
Pretty much.
Oh, boy.
And the otherworldly technology of the Brainiac Queen.
Oh, shit.
So if you've been reading Superman lately, you know who we're referring to.
Yeah.
They're going to be stealing all the metahuman abilities from every superhero and supervillain around the globe, a threat so dire it will take the combined efforts of Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and the superheroes of DC's universe to defeat it, end quote.
So this is going to be like their comic version of Endgame.
Pretty much.
Uh-oh.
So I'm showing Pad the promotional art right now.
That's fucking nuts, and I kind of want it framed.
Yeah, this is Dan Mora 101. Like, Dan Mora, like we've said many times, probably the best artist in the game right now.
Uh-huh.
And that is saying something because there's amazing artists left and right no matter where you turn. The article also lists that there will be an Absolute Power Free Comic Book Day issue on May 4th that... quote, fans can get an early jump on the excitement and the intrigue with Absolute Power and Free Comic Book Day. As DC revealed, Dan Moore's cover for the 2024 Absolute Power Free Comic Book Day special edition. So this will be one to keep an eye on for on Free Comic Book Day.
Looks like it's going
to
be 12 pages.
Yep, but still, I think this is, if it gives a sneak preview, because you're talking 2 months of the buildup going into this, it's going to be big.
Yeah, and it looks like if you want to jump into this story, looking at an article from IGN.com, the article says, partway into it, quote, the standalone one-shot special Absolute Power Ground Zero will bridge the gap between Action Comics and the main Absolute Power series. So that looks like it's going to be the lead-in from Action Comics to Absolute Power. So definitely going to be, you want to add that to your list.
Well, they've been doing a lot of this, too, because during the conference as well, it was announced about the Dawn of DC era is coming to an end.
Which to everyone freaking out, oh, my God, they're going to reset the numbers. They're going to reset the timeline again. Stop. Take a deep breath. No. They're just getting rid of the name thing at the top of every issue that's been out for how many years now? Couple years.
Okay, it's been a couple of years, but obviously this movement has been such a big win for DC.
And, I agree.
And if you haven't picked up DC in quite some time,
start with Nightwing.
Yeah, Nightwing too, especially before Tom Taylor and Bruno leave.
Yeah,
because that has been announced that that the final arc is getting worked on right now.
It's gonna be a home run. I'm telling you that.
Oh God, yeah. But everything that they've done with this Dawn of DC era, which debuted in 2023 January, like I said, it was almost first of the year, has really revolutionized the fandom.
Yeah.
And I think that that's why a lot of fans are acting the way they are online about this. And that's why we're kind of deep diving into this a little bit more. Because for the first time in a few years, in my opinion, it really felt like DC was expanding the universe a little bit. Like it wasn't so much focused on the Trinity characters of Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
We started getting more... supporting characters are getting lead shots in books, and every book that has come out on this line has really been emphasized about the core elements of superheroes.
Yes,
storytelling.
Yes,
like you can go to Blue Beetle, Green Lantern War Journal, Doom Patrol, Birds of Prey. Like a lot of these books have just been really just knocking out of the park.
Yeah,
and especially too, like with the Superman line, like we've been championing this quite some time.
Yep.
Every book on that line
is a home run.
Is a smash.
It's insane.
Tom Taylor's run with Superman Jonathan Kent.
Yeah.
The adjectiveless Superman by Joshua Williamson and Jamal Campbell when he was drawing it. And I know they've had kind of a rotating cast of artists after that.
Yep.
Still, probably some of the best Superman books I've read. Action Comics.
Yep.
Killing it right now. Like, there has been such an emphasis back on the storytelling aspect that it's excited the fan base. And fans have been clamoring for this. You know, it hasn't been so focused around crossovers and such, and just the fresh take on this.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Has been nothing but a win. I mean, sure, we've had some crossovers. We had Night Terrors, which some people loved, some people didn't. I mean, I understood it for what it was, and I'm not mad about it. Like I say, with any big crossover you do, not everything is perfect.
No.
And I think that there's elements in there that I would have done maybe differently if I was
writing.
I mean,
I read the Nightwing one because I was catching up on Nightwing on the DC Infinite or whatever it's called app. You know, I read them. I didn't hate them. I didn't love them. I'm like, oh, okay, that was a story.
Yeah, like I say, there's just certain elements, like I said, if I was writing, but, you know, I'm not mad at the takes the writers took on it. Yeah. I'm really not. I'm just like, okay, this was what it was. And it even led to better storylines. I mean, I will even say this. Coming out of Night Terrors, the stat quo of Batman changed.
Very true. Yeah.
And we did have the Batman Catwoman Gotham War.
Yeah.
Which has now spiraled into the birth of Failsafe, as you're watching with Chip Zdarsky's run with Jorge Jimenez.
Right.
And the insanity that is following true with the Joker Year One.
Holy shit. Yeah.
Which has a lot of fans talking.
Just when you thought they couldn't do anything crazy with the Joker.
Uh-huh.
No pun intended.
No, they went some places with it. But I love the risk that the team is taking. I love the fact that they're willing to do it. And if fans are really skeptical about it, you also have the Batman and Robin series.
Yes.
That is of stark contrast.
I mean, they're hitting everything out of the park, and it's coming off of a time where, let's face it, DC's taken their lumps.
Mm-hmm.
They've had a few L's, you know, but this is one that, like you said, especially since I picked up the DC Infinite app, I'm reading stuff that I, like, Batman, sure, love me some Batman comics. Superman comics, absolutely. Goddamn-lutely.
Yeah.
You know, but they've got me reading some stuff, like some of the Green Lantern stuff and other stuff that, it, you know, some Flash, picking up some of the Flash stuff and giving that a shot. You know, it's just been, everything's been so much fun to read.
Oh, yeah, and that's the whole thing that's gotten fans excited. And this is something that when people heard about Absolute Power, it is marking the end of the quote-unquote dawn of DC.
Sure.
But I don't think that we're going to see that big of a stat quo shift.
No.
If anything, there will be some subtle changes in the storylines.
Well, yeah.
Arguably, what will happen is we will have the return of the Justice League. And I think that will take...
Hell yeah.
Because currently the Titans are the main superhero team.
You knew it wasn't going to be a permanent thing that the Justice League was gone.
Right. I mean, that's the whole thing. That's like saying you're going to take the Avengers out.
I was just going to use that same comparison.
Yeah, like...
We're never writing the Avengers again. Uh-huh. Sure. Right.
But you know what? This proves that the Titans can, you know, stand on their own two feet.
Yeah.
The Titan series is very, very good.
Oh, yeah.
But it's all, you know, Tom Taylor's writing it, or one of the biggest names in comics.
Yes.
And the team behind him, too, is also bailing, you know, like, I wouldn't say bailing, but it's bailing him out. But they're amplifying it, too. Like, yes. Every issue has been a win. The fact that the Titans led their own crossover with Beast World.
Right.
And that had been, if you have not read Beast World, I thought it was very, very good.
That was one that, like, when they announced it, I'm like, you're doing fucking what? Okay, I'll give it a shot because you've been doing real good in my eyes the last couple months, last year or so.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came and went, and I'm like, okay, I'm all for it.
And it plants the seeds for what they're doing in Absolute Power. So yeah. I love how they're doing the multi-storytelling on different levels because it's still centering around Superman, Batman, not so much with Wonder Woman,
no,
but with Titans. Like, they're really kind of focusing on that. Well, Wonder Woman's doing her own storyline, which
right.
the Tom King run has been really, really good, too. But it all ties into why the fans have really been excited about this and hearing about how it's going to end.
Yeah.
It does give a little pause because we're really living in this great renaissance with DC.
Yeah.
That I know, like, for me as a fan, I don't want to end. But I'm also accepting the fact that we're still going to get great stories out of this.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think we're going to have a reset by any stretch of the imagination.
No, the momentum's there. They're not going to stop it.
No.
At this point.
No. And the fact that you put probably your best creative team on this crossover, too.
Yeah. I can't remember a time previously where, you know, every pick they put for, like, who writes what has been this good.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Like, there's been hit and misses over the years, sure. But, like, everybody has just been doing such a great job.
Yes. And that's the whole thing, too, that you're seeing these creators really, you know, tell these fantastic stories, especially these iconic characters that have been around 80 years.
Yeah.
And they're really going into some crazy directions with it.
Oh, my God.
And it plays out so well. Like mm-hmm. I say, it's been nothing but hits.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're really allowed to go and tell some, you know, imaginative stories.
Yeah.
It's been nothing but to re-energize a fan base has been waiting for, because let's face it, we've been dominated so much by Marvel and the MCU films, and everybody is living and dying by that.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, it all starts at the comics. The comics are the ground level. That's where everything is based.
The adaptations don't exist without the comics because you have to have adapted them from something.
Mm-hmm. And that's the whole point. So when you can take a story like Tom King and Daniel St-Pierre, who is just absolutely taken Wonder Woman to a very, very creative level.
Yeah.
You get these, iconic characters, and you can do something fresh with them and see how the fan base is doing. And everybody's really been excited to see this.
Mm-hmm.
And now, especially with Absolute Power, this is going to be a game-changing event.
Yeah, it's going to be nuts.
And then the fallout, I mean, I think we're going to have a new stat quo, so to speak, but it's not going to be the end of the world. And that's where we're going with the segment too, is you're going to have some really great books to pick up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're really going to have, a new era kick in, but they're going to end the dawn of DC on a strong note.
Absolutely.
And then whatever goes into it, I mean, I expect it to be more of the same. It's just, it's going to have a different label on it.
Yeah.
And like I say, fans just need to pump the brakes about it a little bit too.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I say, I've been reading a lot online about it. I'm just like,
yeah, which I get. The storytelling's been great. You don't want it to end. You don't want it to reset. But nobody ever said it's a reset.
Mm-hmm. No.
Nobody ever said it's a reboot.
No.
It's a continuation.
Right. And especially, too.
It's like a lot of times when Marvel does their big crossover stuff, Avengers versus X-Men, Civil War, that like it's a big game-changing event. Obviously, when you come out on the other side of that, things ain't going to be the same.
Mm-hmm. No, so definitely set your calendars for that on Free Comic Book Day, and then July 2nd is where everything kicks off.
Yep.
And it will be one to remember. I fully trust Mark Waid can handle writing these crossovers.
Yeah.
He's used to doing big events, see Kingdom Come.
Oh, yeah.
And then Dan Moore's artwork on this. Whew.
Yeah.
Get ready for something special.
Uh-huh.
It was also announced, though, at Comics Pro, according to the DC.com article, DC has also announced DC's Finest, a new line of comprehensive collections of the most in-demand period genres and characters from across DC's history. Scheduled launch in November, these affordably priced large paperback collections starting at $34.99 will take full advantage of DC's extensive backlist and appeal to casual and completist fans alike.
Yeah, and I got a list here. So the list includes, and this is just the initial lineup. I'm sure there'll be more to come because DC been around a few years. They can definitely do more books than this. But you've got The Flash, The Human Thunderbolt from 1956 to 1961. Batman Year 1 and 2 from 1986 to 1987. Wonder Woman Origins and Omens from 2007 through 2009. Catwoman Lifelines from 1988 through 1994, and Superman The Coming of Superman from 1938 through 1940.
I'm excited about
that. That's super cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is putting these in collections, I mean, this is something that I think any fan will want to check out.
Uh-huh. And then the other thing, too, I'm reading from the IGN article, they also revealed the release dates for the revival of DC Elseworlds.
Yes, so that has been officially announced what we got coming, because I know it's teased a little bit.
Yeah, so reading from the article, quote, Elseworlds kicks off with the release of Gotham by Gaslight, The Kryptonian Age, number one in June 2024. Then in July, you've got Dark Knights of Steel. Shouldn't mention Gotham by Gaslight's Kryptonian Age number one is by Andy Diggle and Leonardo Fernandez. In July, you've got Dark Knights of Steel All Winter issue number one by Jay Kristoff and Tirso Khans. August is DC versus Vampires World War V issue number one by Matthew Rosenberg and Otto Schmidt.
That's going to be insane.
Yeah, it is. September, you've got Batman the Barbarian issue number one by Greg Smallworld. October, you've got Green Lantern Dark number one by Tate Bromble and Werther
Deladera, I'm sorry.
And then in November, Batman Nightfire issue number one by Clayman.
I am excited about this.
That is fucking nuts.
Now, are you familiar with Elseworlds, Pat?
A little bit.
So Elseworlds was the original multiverse.
That's right.
Pretty much. Like, you would go into this, you'd see an Elseworlds book, and it would be a creative storytelling of an idea with, like, a character. Think Superman Red Son.
Right.
Gotham, I mean, God, there's been so many Batman stories you can take your pick. This is like almost like a precursor to the Black Label to some degrees.
Right.
Like, they're more outside continuum, but you could tell a story, and it'd be something really fun and different.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you have here with this line. Like, I am personally excited for Green Lantern Dark. Because with Tate and Werther, those are names you hear synonymous with Something is Killing the Children.
Uh-huh.
Not James Tynion, but the team obviously does a lot of work with that franchise, and they do fantastic stuff, too.
Yeah.
And this is just another situation. Like, you see Batman as a barbarian. It works.
Yeah, you need to tell me nothing further to sell me.
Yeah, and like I say, this really allows creative freedom, catching into the vibe of the dawn of DC.
Yeah.
Like I say, it's still pushing creativity. It's not exactly a shift in stat quo, and there's a lot of stories to be excited about coming from this line. So I'm excited to see Elseworlds back and seeing how everything plays out with this, too.
Uh-huh.
Like I say, there's so many different ways to go about that. And then the only other thing that was really of noteworthy, but we did touch upon it last week, is about the Marvel and DC reuniting, so to speak.
Yeah.
And the omnibus is coming for that.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of stuff to be excited about as a fan. And that is the biggest thing that we can take away from the announcement as a Comics Pro. You read a lot of DC. I read a lot of DC.
Yes.
I don't think the sky is falling.
No, absolutely not.
I think that right now we're in such a great era that the fans are back.
Yeah.
And I think the powers that be at DC understand this.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still going to be pushing the envelope about creativity. I don't think they're going to shift away from giving lesser tier characters books.
No.
I think that you'll find some of the best storytelling in those characters.
Uh-huh.
And I think that this is something to win fans back over. And especially in a big year where, let's face it, if you're going to make a transition, you want to keep the fans happy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is going to be a big year for DC, obviously, with the shift in the films, and everybody in pop culture is going to start checking out more books.
Yep.
Because James Gunn and Peter Safran are diving heavy into the actual material.
Oh, yeah.
This is nothing but win to me. And I think that if you're a fan, you got to be excited about what's coming out of here, especially Absolute Power.
Yeah.
Final thoughts, Pat?
Super excited to see where they come. They've done no wrong in my eyes with this whole rebirth run, so I'm willing to give it the run and see where it goes from there. And then make a judgment call. If I like it, I'm going to admit it. If I don't like it, I'll still keep reading, but wait and see if it plays out. Super sick. Super excited, though.
Yeah, absolutely. So hit us up on that hashtag ODPagePod. DC Comics announced a lot at Comics Pro. What is your thoughts about Absolute Power? What is your take about the Elseworlds line coming back and DC's Finest coming in November? Plus, I mean, all the other news coming out from there.
Yeah.
We can definitely deep dive into it. There were some smaller tier stories going on as well, but DC shocked everybody with the announcement of Absolute Power. That was the buzz going around. And considering the superstar team behind it, there's much to discuss about this. So let's have that conversation, shall we? We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Hey, guys. It's Alan Dunford here from Top Hat Studios, co-writer and co-creator of Pocus Hocus and Grandma Chainsaw, and you guys are listening to the ODPH podcast.
Gonna beat down to the punch, because they can't bring me down if I'm already under the ground.
Coming back for the final segment on this edition of the ODPH podcast. Pad, what you got?
Got a couple things to talk about. First of which is some unfortunate news. And as everyone, as some of you might have heard the last couple days, there's been some layoffs hit in the video game industry.
Yeah.
So if you're one of those people that's been affected, we are terribly sorry for you.
Absolutely.
And hope you bounce back on your feet very quickly.
Yeah, horrible news here breaking out.
One of the ones that hit today, though, is Electronic Arts is laying off 5% of its workforce. I'm reading from an article on videogameschronicle.com. The article says, quote, the company employed 13,400 staff as of March 2023, according to its most recent annual filing with the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission, meaning it could be cutting about 670 jobs. EA CEO Andrew Wilson said in a letter to employees, quote, given how and where we are working, we are continuing to optimize our global real estate footprint to best support our business. We are also sunsetting games and moving away from development of future licensed IP that we do not believe will be successful in our changing industry. This greater focus allows us to drive creativity, accelerate innovation, and double down on our biggest opportunities, including our owned IP, sports, and massive online communities to deliver the entertainment players want today and tomorrow, close quote. Then there was a couple updates to videogameschronicle.com, the first of which was, quote, sources have told VGC that as part of the cuts, EA has canceled an in-development Star Wars first-person shooter at Respawn. Announced in 2022, the first-person shooter game was being helmed by former LucasArts veteran and Medal of Honor co-creator Peter Hirschman, who previously worked on the original Battlefront games, The Force Unleashed, and more. Hirschman most recently directed 2020 VR title Medal of Honor Above and Beyond. Close quote. So super sad news to hear about that because gotta admit, love me some OG Battlefront. Love me some Force Unleashed. So to hear that canceled, terrible news. But the layoffs also hitting PlayStation and some of their folks. I know Guerrilla Games, the folks who make Horizon Zero Dawn, they got hit. They're cutting 10% of their workforce. Jesus. I also know some of the folks at PlayStation got hit. I know Naughty Dog got hit. And then I know also Insomniac got hit as well. Like, they just had the massive release of Spider-Man 2.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Insomniac also got hit as well. The other thing, too, that came out of this, Sony has also reportedly canceled the Twisted Metal television series. So that is reportedly no longer going forward.
Jesus, man.
So super unfortunate news. But like we said, hopefully everyone that has unfortunately been laid off bounces back very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. It's heartbreaking news.
Yeah. And then sticking with some video game news, the other day, just yesterday as we record, was Pokemon Day.
Yes. Happy Pokemon Day if you celebrate.
Yeah. So a bunch of stuff going on if you play Pokemon Go. They've got some in-game stuff going on, so definitely check that out. They announced some stuff for the Sleep app, which admittedly I tried. Not my cup of tea. But they did announce a new game releasing worldwide in 2025. It is Pokemon Legends Z-A, however that is pronounced.
Or Z-Day.
Z-Day, however it's said. But it is looks like it is going to be a sequel to the Pokemon Legends Arceus game, which came out in 2022. Not a whole lot shown in the trailer. Trailer looked good, but hey, it's a mainline Pokemon game, so you know there's going to be a lot of people into that.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also announced a new game coming to mobile phones, so Apple and Android phones, in 2024. This is the Pokemon trading card game Pocket. Think of it kind of like Marvel Snap, but meets Pokemon.
Okay.
Looks super good. Not going to lie, I'm probably going to dig into this and spend way too much time on this because it looks fun. So I'm super excited to check that out. Some fun stuff coming from Pokemon down the line, though.
Yes. Yeah, if you're into Pokemon, like, there's a renaissance happening here.
Absolutely. Then we got to switch to some streaming news and the streaming / comic news, because reading from an exclusive on Variety.com, the headline reads, quote, Brian Michael Bendis.
Okay.
Yes, that guy.
I was going to say the Brian Michael Bendis.
Signs Amazon first look deal developing Jinx,
ooh,
Pearl, and Murder, Inc. into shows.
Okay.
The article reads, quote, comic book author Brian Michael Bendis has set a first look deal with Amazon, is already developing three TV series under the new pact based on his previous works, Jinx, Murder, Inc., and Pearl. Jinx is a crime-ridden love story unfolding on a high-stakes treasure hunt, per Amazon's series description. Our players are Jinx Almeida, a bounty hunter at the top of her game who's tired of her grimy life. Goldfish, a charming con man and wanted felon who falls head over heels for Jinx.
Mm-hmm.
And Columbia, Goldfish's loose cannon partner who has big criminal dreams. Their paths join when they're pulled into a search for missing mob money, a payout so big that it lures them away from the familiar streets of Cleveland into a dangerous, unpredictable misadventure that will change the course of their lives. Jinx is executive produced by Bendis, along with showrunners Ilette Waldman and Michael Chabon from Star Trek Picard and Unbelievable. Set in an alternate world where five families never lost their stranglehold on the country, Murder, Inc. follows Valentine Gallo, a newly made man whose first task for the mob ends with an explosion, sending him on the run from rival gangsters and the CIA, according to its logline. Dragged into the fray is Jaeger Rose, a normally cool young hit woman who was tasked with supervising Valentine and has wound up with a target on her back, too. Just when Valentine thinks his initiation into organized crime couldn't be more of a disaster, he learns that his mother is conspiring with the FBI and has promised them, since his birth, that he'll be an informant. That was definitely not his plan. But for now, he and Jaeger will need to find a way to come together and fight for control of their territory and their fate. Bendis and series co-creator Michael Oeming Powers, executive producer Tsi Chun from I'm a Virgo, is set as showrunner. Pearl is about Pearl Tanaka, an outsider among outsiders, a Japanese-American with albinism. Born into a world ruled by the American Yakuza, now she uses her unequaled skills as a tattoo artist to make an honest living in San Francisco. That all changes the day that she meets another tattoo artist, Rick Araki, and saves his life. Rick has made enemies of a different Yakuza clan, and by interfering with their hit on him, Pearl might just have ignited a deadly gang war. And worse, Pearl has inadvertently revealed to her Yakuza bosses one of her deepest secrets. She has a real talent for killing. Now, to pay off her debt, she must become their assassin. Bendis executive produces alongside series co-creator Michael Gatos from Jessica Jones and showrunner Chris Collins, the man in the High Castle. Close quote.
Exciting stuff.
Absolutely.
I'm familiar with Jinx more than the other two.
Okay.
But still, anytime you get comics on TV, that's a good win. I, you know, to be honest, I'll put the karma out there. I would love to see Masterpiece, his current series he's got on there. That's built for TV, too. But big win, though.
Uh-huh.
Big win.
Yeah. And then we got a little bit of a brief update, or at least a title release year, for the upcoming Harry Potter TV series at Max. With slated, according to David Zaslav, going to be releasing or scheduled to hit in 2026. Don't know a whole much about else about it. But hey, listen, you got a tall task in front of you, folks. So
yeah,
good fucking luck.
Yeah.
Then got to talk a little bit of reviews because some stuff has dropped in the last week and we got to talk a little bit about it. First of which is Avatar: The Last Airbender on Netflix. All 8 episodes have dropped. I have seen the first 2. I have not seen the rest of it because I'm watching it with my fiance Liz because we both love the animated series. It's good. I'm not going to say it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. I'm not going to say it's the greatest show of all time. It's definitely made some changes from the source material if you've watched the original cartoon. But the thing to keep in mind, and I've always been this way ever since I saw the Harry Potter movies. First I read the books and then I watched the movies. So maybe it's just I'm used to this because I've been dealing with this for over 20 years now. Changes from source material because they're adaptations have never bothered me that much.
Right.
It bothered me a lot when it was Harry Potter, but I got used to it as time went on. It's not a remake. It's not. It's an adaptation. There's going to be changes. So some of them, I admit, are a little bold and a little interesting. And if you feel that way about some of those changes, that's perfectly fine. I got no issues with that.
That's on you.
That's on you. That's your opinion. That's perfectly fine. But with some of the folks I've seen online complaining about how the costumes don't look lived in, like, I feel like at that point you're nitpicking.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, if you've got complaints about what they do in the show and how that's not how it happened in the source material and that's not how you think it would have gone down, that's fine. That's perfectly up to you. But just don't nitpick for the sake of nitpicking.
Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah. Then the other one is the first 2 episodes of FX's new show Shogun have dropped on FX.
Yeah, I heard a lot of good things about this.
Yeah, so the first 2 episodes are out. I watched the first one, have not seen the second one. I'll say this. They got a real potential for a smash hit on their hands. First episode is phenomenal. Definitely, if you give that a watch, be prepared to read a lot of subtitles because it's set in Japan in the 1600s. The folks that live in Japan are speaking Japanese. They don't do the whole, they're Japanese, but they're somehow miraculously speaking English. No, they don't do that. They speak Japanese. They've got a real potential on their hands because it's very Game of Thrones-esque in that it's great set pieces, great, background stuff, but then it's also following multiple people. So there's going to be a lot of pieces to keep in track, but I'm very interested to see where this goes.
Yeah, from what I've seen so far, like, I really want to check this out. I've just been tied up with too many things, but I am definitely all in about this.
And then going to talk The Bad Batch because season 3 of The Bad Batch has dropped. 4 episodes are out. I've only seen the first 3 because I was a little too busy this morning to watch episode 4. Also, admittedly, I forgot they dropped on Wednesdays. I thought it was Thursday for some reason.
That's what I thought too. That's why.
I didn't even hit me until I saw people posting about it. I'm like, oh, right, that comes out on Wednesday, not Thursday. But no, the first 3 episodes have dropped. Confined, Paths Unknown, and Shadow of Tantus. And the first episode, not to get into too many spoilers, first episode focuses on Omega. It's a good little bridge to from season 2 to season 3. Of course, season 3 is going to be the final one. Part 2, episode 2, Paths Unknown. Definitely a good episode, but for me, the smash hit thus far of the episodes I've seen is episode 3. There is a certain phrase and a certain thing that gets mentioned that I went, oh, son of a bitch. Oh, son of a bitch. Oh, shit. Oh, shit. Oh, shit.
Okay.
Because if you've been paying attention to some of the Star Wars projects, Mandalorian and Bad Batch, that project gets, that thing gets named and you hear it and you go, oh, my God, So it's all connected, folks. Definitely give it a watch. Highly recommend it.
Yeah, we'll be talking about that next week.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I'm caught up by then.
And then I got something fun for Ken. And you, the listener at home. This has been going down on the DC Comics subreddit the last, 2 weeks or so.
And for context, Pat has not told me about this. I'm going in cold.
Going in cold. So there is a person on the DC Comics subreddit who, over the last, 13, 14 days, initially did the asking folks on the DC Comics subreddit what is the best adaptation for each DC superhero. And they did Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, The Flash, Green Lantern. They did both Hal Jordan and Jon Stewart. Then they did Aquaman, Martian Manhunter, Hawk Girl, Shazam, Nightwing, Cyborg, and Green Arrow. Okay. So for the best adaptation for Superman, and then now the way this worked is the person would post the picture on the subreddit for the respective day and say, what's the best adaptation for Superman?
Okay, so
they would post the thread, and then users would go and comment what they thought was the best. And then whichever one folks agreed with, they would upvote it. So whatever was the top comment on the thread, that's the one that would win.
Okay. All right, now I'm with you. Okay.
So for Superman, the number one vote was Superman the Animated Series.
Over the movies?
This includes movies. This is not comic adaptations. This is movies, television shows, video games, anything that's been broadcasted. They said Superman the Animated Series.
I can see it.
Okay.
I would say the original Christopher Reeves movies.
Okay.
That's where I would go.
Okay.
But I can see it with a shout out to Superman Lois.
Then for Batman, obviously Batman the Animated Series. Yep.
Yeah.
For Wonder Woman, it was the Linda Carter television series.
Yep, fully agree there.
For Flash, it was the Justice League Animated Series.
Over Grant Gustin?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know about that one. It's up there, but to each their own.
For the Hal Jordan Green Lantern, they said Green Lantern the Animated Series. That was the 3D one, which admittedly I haven't seen, but I've heard good things about.
It's okay.
Yeah.
I would not pick that. I'm not saying the Ryan Reynolds movie.
Right.
I'm not going there, but yeah. I would say, I'm just trying to think of animated wise.
Sure.
Yeah, no, asterisks on that one.
And then for the Jon Stewart, they said the Justice League Animated
Series. Yes. Yeah, I fully agree there.
For Aquaman, they said Young Justice.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Young Justice.
Oh, I don't agree with that.
For Martian Manhunter, the Justice League Animated Series.
Yes, I'll give you that.
For Hawk Girl, Justice League Animated Series.
Yep.
Shazam, they said Young Justice.
Yeah, I could see that.
For Nightwing, they said Young Justice.
Yeah.
For Cyborg, they said Teen Titans, and specifically this is the one from the early mid-2000s that was on Cartoon Network.
Okay.
And then for Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, they said Justice League Unlimited. Over Stephen Amell.
Oh, okay.
And then we get to the worst adaptations.
Okay,
of
let's go.
Of
I can
DC superhero.
This will be fun.
Same cast of characters. For Superman, they said Injustice: Gods Among Us, the video game.
Yes. Not I was gonna say an animated movie.
They said Injustice: Gods Among Us. That version of Superman is the worst adaptation of Superman.
No, I disagree with that, but anyway.
For Batman, they said...
Superman Quest of Peace? Come on. I mean...
Injustice Gods Among Us.
No, okay. I'm going to go down a rabbit hole. This is going to be bad. Okay, never mind.
Oh, we're just getting started. Batman, they said it was the version from Titans.
Yes. Because... Not on the actor.
Sure.
But the writing on that was not... His character was just, it was messy.
Mm-hmm.
That's the easiest way to describe it. It's just messy.
For Wonder Woman, they said Injustice: Gods Among Us.
Really?
Yeah, considering everything she does in that story. Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, I could see that. Okay.
For The Flash, they said the Ezra Miller Flash movie from last year.
Yes, fully. 1,000% co-signed that.
For Hal Jordan, they said Green Lantern, Beware My Power.
Over the movie?
Uh-huh. I was reading that thread the other day. A lot of people said there's nothing redeeming about that movie.
Yeah, there's nothing redeeming about the movie.
For Jon Stewart, they said that the Suicide Squad game.
The one that just came out?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
For Aquaman, they said Super Friends.
I mean,
the main argument for Super Friends with Aquaman was that's literally where the butt of the jokes over the last 20 years have come from.
Yeah.
Because all he did in that show was call the fish.
Right. Because it's, yeah. All right. I'll give you that one.
For Martian Manhunter, they said Zack Snyder's Justice League.
He was only in like two scenes.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'll give you that.
For Hawk Girl, DC's Legends of Tomorrow.
Yes. Yes, I will say that.
For Shazam, it was Shazam Fury of the Gods.
Second movie, yeah.
Yeah.
Second movie's not good.
For Nightwing, they said Dick Grayson from Batman and Robin.
Okay, we're going to go down the whole Dick Grayson like lineage. Yeah, I mean, Batman and Robin is this whole other chill out.
Yeah.
That's, yeah.
For Cyborg, Injustice.
Man, everybody hating Injustice. What is this, slander?
And then for Green Arrow, Stephen Amell's Green Arrow.
Stop.
The main argument with this, and because of the worst adaptation, the main thing people were saying for that was he wasn't even really Green Arrow in that show. He was more Bruce Wayne.
Right. Which, see, he started that way, but it kind of, like, season four was more towards the Green Arrow that we know from the comics.
Sure.
I will say this. Season three of Arrow, yeah, no, worse adaptation. Because it was literally, they did Birth of the Demon.
Mm-hmm.
No, which should never have happened on TV. Should never happen, period. Not with Oliver Queen. Okay, now you got me heated and now I'm going off about this. No, absolutely not. There's no way that should have storyline should have ever happened.
I'm looking at the thread from that day, and the top comment was discount Batman from Arrow. Another top comment, CW Arrow, there's nothing that can top the worst adaptation for Green Arrow. Another person said the Arrow show and that he was just Batman, not Green Arrow. Arrowverse, it's a mediocre adaptation of the Batman, but it's nothing like Green Arrow. Another person said, I like Arrow, but it's Arrow.
Well, that's the whole thing. You got to take the interpretation of it. I mean, I understand it's not to the letter of the comics. Ollie is a different character in the comics.
Sure.
And what we already if you follow that whole timeline, they were trying to tie it into the Nolan universe because they were hoping to get some, you know, like Marvel, it's all tied together.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. So they did redeem it a little bit. That's right. What I say. Like, it wasn't like I'm looking at just like the entire run.
Sure.
So that's where I'm going from it. But
sure.
Oh, the Injustice slander is more firing me up about that. That is pissing me off more. I'm sorry. I love Injustice.
I know.
Listen, it's a great story, so it makes sense. Worst takes ever. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What happens? They prove you kill Lois Lane, Superman goes crazy. The world's all in danger. What? I mean, it's the truth, all right?
I'm pulling up the Superman one now. Let's just see what sorted my best. Let's go to top. Oh, Injustice was the top comment because, well, yeah. Somebody said Man of Steel. Talk about a bleak fest. Everything Superman should never be.
Stop.
The Batman hooking up with the Batgirl is the worst. But there could be
worse. Oh, I'll sign off on that for the animated killing joke, yeah.
Somebody said DCEU damaged the character on a mainstream level. Injustice is super over the top, but it's Elseworlds and meant to be a different take.
Yes.
DCEU did so much damage to the character and the brand as a whole. Absolute disaster.
See, that's the whole thing. Injustice is Elseworlds. So yeah, it's supposed to be different like that.
Yeah.
Which I appreciate difference. Yeah. That's why I say I'm excited to see Elseworlds. We've got Batman as a barbarian. Like, this is the world we live in. I'm okay with this. I'm perfectly fine with it. I'm excited to read that book.
Yeah.
But the Injustice slander, I will not hear for.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it's the one comment I looked up, the Wonder Woman said, as a huge Wonder Woman fan, definitely Injustice, such a disgrace to the original character. Somebody can replied, they don't even give a plausible reason why someone as level-headed and as respectful of freedom and independence would go insta, we are always right, and anyone who doesn't agree deserves to die, and I've always resented Batman for being too weak. She just turns into Superman's yes girl and loses all human logical thinking because of what happened to Metropolis. At least the other leaguers either lost someone or in the someone in the bombing or slowly got disillusioned as the tyranny became more apparent and innocence got sacrificed. The fact that they don't even try to give Wonder Woman some kind of reason for her fall from grace and the insinuation that a completely normal Wonder Woman would just become an egomaniacal dictator warlord if Superman gave her the go-ahead was so annoying. The animated version was even worse than the game because when she does get shaken out of it by seeing Superman massacre a bunch of rebellious teenagers for dressing up as the Joker, she just switched sides and acted like nothing happened. No remorse for her actions, no paying for her crimes. She just turned on Superman and decided she was a good person again and needed no comeuppance as long as she took down the psycho she'd been enabling. God, she sucked, close quote.
You know what? I can't argue that. She was actually written really bad in Injustice.
Yeah.
Everybody else is fine, though, but still. Yeah, no, Wonder Woman could have been a lot better than that. I will concede that.
Yeah.
But Superman's take was fine because he pushed him over the edge, so he went crazy. Like I say,
there's a reason I didn't read you this list.
Yeah. Oh, my God, yeah. I need to be behind a Patreon wall for this one. Jesus. Ah, okay. Well, OD Page Society, hit us up with your takes.
Yeah, let us know what you think.
Oh, I can expect a few of them coming in. There's going to be I definitely want to do this. In fact, we should do it for the Marvel, too.
Ooh.
Do that for next week, maybe. Yeah. We'll think of something for that. But in the meantime, yeah, hit us up on that hashtag. Let us know the best and worst takes of the DC heroes listed previously. Yeah. Definitely have those conversations. I don't want to hear the Injustice slander. Oh, all right. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about some comics.
Yeah. So here's what I'm picking up at the comic shops this week. Mostly Marvel. DC's got a real quiet week this week.
Yeah.
First, Resurrection of Magneto, issue number 2 from Al Ewing. This one reads, "The key, the secret. In the depths, Magneto was given a key by strange forces, and impossibly he holds it still. Now, in death, Max Einstark judges his own life and counts the cost. Should he return to the world? Can he allow Storm to bring him back? And what does the deep key unlock?"
First issue was a little different.
Yeah.
I will admit, I was not like blown away by it personally. Yeah. Like I thought it was good, but I was like, I don't know. Like it's trippy.
Yeah.
So I imagine more of the same with this one. I'm definitely excited to go check this one out.
Next up is Wolverine issue number 44 from Victor Lavelle. This is Sabretooth War part 4. This reads, quote, "Death has followed Logan for over a century, but as the blood pools and the gravestones pile up around him, what happens when Sabretooth kills again? The fallout of significant mutant deaths and a desperate tactical play by Wolverine and X-Force turns the Sabretooth War on its head."
This series is not for the faint of heart. Ben Piercy
is
crafting something absolutely insane. And there is a lot of elements going on here. Like, I like it, but it's definitely an intense portrayal of Wolverine and Sabretooth.
Yeah. Next up, Invincible Iron Man, issue number 15 from Gary Dugan. This room reads, quote, "Months ago, James Rhodes was framed and arrested on an intel gathering mission that unearthed a terrible truth. Orcus isn't planning to stop with mutants. They have every hero on Earth in their sights. Orcus will stop at nothing to achieve machine ascendancy. But when you've got to fight machines, it pays to have a war machine of your own. So this is one I am super excited for. If you have not been reading The Invincible Iron Man by Gary Dugan, do yourself a favor. Read it. It is fucking incredible.
I've heard good things about
it. Oh, my God. It's so good. And then lastly, certainly not leastly, What If Venom, issue number 1 of 5 from Jeremy Holt is the author of this one. And this one reads, "Black variant cover also available. Years ago, in a familiar church tower, the Venom symbiote was spurned by Peter Parker and found a willing host in the vengeful and wrathful Eddie Brock. Or at least that's the story you know. From Rising Stars, Jeremy Holt, Marvel's Voices, Spider-Verse, and Jesus Hervas from Marvel Unleashed, comes an all-new look at what makes the Marvel Universe most sinister symbiote tick. And with a journey that reimagines its earliest days, bonded to a host with a range and temper entirely different from those of Eddie Brock." And the cover of this is absolute fuck.
That's a dope cover.
So on the one hand, you've got symbiote Loki. Then you move to the left, you've got Doctor Strange looking like he's trying to shed the symbiote with like little lines depicting it, like, hey, it's different universes. Then you've got what looks like to be Venom Wolverine.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if there's one in the bottom right. It might be, it's just the green leg. It might be Jennifer Walters, maybe.
Could be Jennifer Walters. Could be, well, I mean, I would say maybe Norman Osborn, but I don't, but I think it's,
no,
but
you know, I think it's got some purple there in the torso. So it might be Venom Green Goblin. Oh boy.
Yeah.
And then on the right, where about 3 o'clock is on the clock.
That's Moon Knight.
Venom Moon Knight.
Yeah.
Oh shit.
It's interesting that they want to go that route with it, but you know, that's the one thing with Venom. You can go a lot of different places with it as you need to. So, yeah, Marvel has got a monster week out.
Yeah, they do.
You know, for me, from them, Amazing Spider-Man 44 is the end of Gang War. There's one more issue coming out after that that's Daredevil Gang War number 4.
Okay.
But this is the one, all the key players are in place. It's the Battle of Central Park. It's an absolute wild issue. Zeb Wells, John Romita Jr., cap things off, and they, you know, you have a definitive winner.
Okay.
I really dug the issue. I think fans are going to like it. If you've been into this, Gang War, which I have, because it's a more back to basic Spider-Man.
Sure.
I think it's been a solid read. So I think fans are going to definitely be excited about this. From Image Comics, Skybound Entertainment, Duke number 3. Listen, Joshua Williamson and Tom Riley are doing some really fun stuff here with Duke, and this is the Energon universe. His first encounter post, or his story after his first encounter with Starscream.
Uh-huh.
And just the insanity. Like, this is just nonstop action. Like, you just think Hollywood blockbuster. That's what you get here. Like I said, you can just throw on, like, you know, the old school Motley Crue and just rock out to this issue. Like, it's just is that freaking badass. I love this series. I think they do no wrong with this. So that is a definite pickup this week. DC Comics, like you mentioned, had kind of a quieter week this week, but the one that jumped out to me is the Penguin number 7. So this is Tom King. Stefan Stubik is stepping in for art for this.
Ooh.
This is the story about the first encounter of Batman and the Penguin.
Oh.
So if you haven't followed this story, it's based around Penguin has been recruited by the government.
Right.
And he's more or less working as an informant, so to speak. Like, it's kind of, it's an interesting take.
Right.
But this has been a little break for the second arc, and they've been retelling the first encounter with Batman. And it's a real interesting read. I will say that, how King is setting up their first encounter and where their relationship has gone since.
Right.
So if you're into that kind of vibe, you'll definitely dig the issue. I just thought it was kind of interesting because I know in the regular Batman title, we had Joker year 1.
Yeah.
So I was surprised to see it go back-to-back like that. But, you know, it's still a great story to check out. So if you're into the Penguin, you're going to love this. And then also Image Comic wise, I forgot to mention a monumental issue coming out. I had the chance to read it a couple weeks earlier. Radiant Black 28 and 28.5. So the Massiverse, Kyle Higgins is doing some ingenious stuff. And if you haven't been checking out the Catalyst War, you have to read both parts because they're separate stories, but they're both impactful. Massiverse fans are buzzing about this today, and rightfully so. It's a big issue on both sides. 2 issues left, and well, technically 4, until everything wraps up. And then I do not know this officially. This is just my guess as a fan.
Uh-huh.
I'm expecting a big reset after this all goes down. Okay. That is how big the Catalyst War is. Like, it feels like we should expect something big following this. And we are projecting right around that Supermassive time.
Hey.
Which, if you know that time of year, well, we got to talk to some old friends. So stay tuned for that, ...
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yes. And last but certainly not least on my docket this week, one of my favorite series on Comixology Originals and Dark Horse Comics has come to a conclusion.
Oh, yeah?
And that is the All-Nighter.
Ah.
So this is Chip Zdarsky and Jason Lowe's imaginative story tale about a supernatural family who is, you know, hiding their identities as working in an all-night diner.
Okay.
But the story is way, way more than that. It's so layered. It's just fantastic. You want to talk about creative storytelling. You want to talk about really flipping myths on the 180 and just doing something different. This is the whole story. This is the whole vibe. And it ends on a very, very strong note. Like, this is bittersweet because I've really enjoyed this series. I didn't want to see it end, and now that we're here, like, I'm left, like, I know it's the end. We're arguably not getting any more down the road. They've done a final farewell that really serves as a good goodbye to the fans, and I really recommend this. If you haven't checked this out, like I said, first 2 volumes are out trade paperback form via Dark Horse Comics. You can pick up at the comic shops. Third one is out right now on Comixology Originals. I'm assuming that's coming to print for Dark Horse sooner than later. So definitely make sure to go check that out at the comic shops and at the digital shops as well. And as we always like to say, when you're out, make sure you go hit up your local comic shops wherever you're at. They're doing great things. And, and, you know, especially with how we touched upon the dawn of DC, every time you walk in a shop these days, there's a buzz going on.
Oh, yeah.
And I love seeing that. I love seeing fans talk. It's why we do these shows, folks. It's why we do the podcast. It's why we do Turn a Page. It's why we do the reviews every week. We like having those interactions with fans because it's proven the comic industry, you know, is a great place for fandom right now. So definitely keep that up. Keep your fans up, you know, your favorite books up, and definitely talk about them online. Just keep it positive and keep it professional. That's what we say. That being said, for anything and everything that is the ODPH, you can find it at odphpodcast.com. That's it for this week. So for the one and only Padawan J.
Thank you.
I'm your host, Ken M. Thank you, as always, for listening to the ODPH podcast. We'll see you next time.